Open. Have we got a quorum? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Is that a quorum or do we need 7? I think 6 is a quorum, yep. Okay, I would like to acknowledge the Kwandamooka people who are the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet. I would also like to pay respect to their elders past and present and extend that respect to any other Indigenous Australian that are present here with us today. I've just got to read about the public conduct at meetings. All members of the public present at the meeting must, not without prior approval of the chairperson, make any audio or video recording or take any photographs. Remain quiet and not disrupt the meeting in any way. Not bring into the meeting any signs, placards or items that may cause a hazard or interfere with any person present. Be suitably dressed and turn all mobile devices to silent mode and leave the meeting to take any calls. As chairperson, it is my responsibility to warn a member of the public present at a meeting who is not complying with any of these requirements and may, with or without such warning, require the person to leave the meeting and not return for such period as the chairperson decides. This period may include future meetings. Now we go on to leave of absences. Can I have a mover and seconder, please, for a leave of absence be granted to Mayor Williams? Move Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Bishop. All in favour? And also a leave of absence for Councillor Tolte. Moved Councillor Edwards, seconded Councillor Mitchell. All in favour? Thank you. And now, my pleasure to hand over to Pastor Steve Kennedy from the Redlands Minister Fellowship to lead council in a brief devotional segment. Thank you, Steve.
Oh, they need
there
to,
we go.
Oh, here we go. Oh, fantastic, we're on. Let me just share a small story. We used to say things like the Bible says, but these days most people don't read it. So there's a famous story from, I think, the world's most famous king, King Solomon, 3,000 years ago. He had two women march down the hallway one time, and they were yelling and screaming about the fact. The story goes like this. They were both professed to be prostitutes, was their profession. They had both fallen pregnant, and they both lived in the same house, and they both bore a child within 3 days of each other. The reason they're in the king's presence is that the argument is that during the night, one of them had rolled on her baby, and it had died very sadly. And so that woman got up while the other still slept, put the dead child in the mother's arms, and then took the living child back to her own bed. So you can imagine the ho-hum in the morning when the mother got up to feed her child and the child was not breathing. Very, very sad situation. And on closer inspection, when the sun came up, she realised that is not my child. And so one thing led to another. They're now before the king, the new king, King Solomon. And he says, tell me the story. In fact, he starts this way. He says, let me get the facts. And so they tell the story I've just told to you. And he said, okay. And I guess there's a pause and a silence and a sigh in the crowd. And then he says, bring me a sword. A sword is presented because he's the king. And then the child is held up and he says, we'll cut it in half. We'll give half to this one and half to that one. We'll settle the issue. One of the women yelled out, don't do it. I'd rather the child live. Give her to her. While the other woman said, nah, give us half each. Well, here in 2017, we'd probably get the answer to that. So he just said, right, give it to the one that wanted the child to live. Obviously, that's the real mother. And it says that the fame of King Solomon went throughout the entire realm because of the wisdom he had in deciding, you know, such a complex matter. So let's talk about wisdom for 2 minutes, and then I'd like to pray for you. Here's the first thing about wisdom, and that is you don't need wisdom when it's black and white. Well, today, of course, we just take Buzz on down to get a blood test, a DNA test, and it's all done in about 5 minutes. But 3,000 years ago, without the benefit of that, wisdom finds its best place in the grey. And ladies and gentlemen, seriously, you are not here because you have decided to get plastic bags for dog poop. A high school student could have done that. But we'll have grey matters that our city will need to decide on. And you have been graced and elected for those matters of great. That's where wisdom, of course, will need to come to the fore. The other thing you don't need wisdom for is to see a problem. I'm sure the whole way up the hall with these girls yelling, everyone, Houston. In fact, I'm sure people are hiding in cupboards. And so every one of us in the city, and I live in the city as most of us would, we see what's going on, but you're here because you're different to us. You're here because you're looking for the answers. And no doubt the placard waving that we're not allowed to do in here is all about seeing the problems. But I do, I honour you, because the wisdom you will need is to get beyond the problem and to find the solution. And for that, I'm glad you're here. And then thirdly, before I pray for you, I think that wisdom, what I noticed is wisdom can be acquired. I've never seen a wise two-year-old. I've got a one-year-old grandson, I have a nine-year-old granddaughter as well, and a five-year-old, but I have a one-year-old grandson at the moment, and he's just so eager to touch a hot plate. He sees a fan whirring, he just wants to stick his fingers in there. I've just not seen a wise two-year-old. And in fact, if I can just read a small portion of Solomon's prayer, he said, "No, now, Lord God, you have made me king instead of my father David." He says, "But I am like a little child. And it's very difficult for me. Here I am in the midst of your chosen people, a nation so numerous it cannot be counted. So please, would you give me wisdom so that I can govern your people well?" And so it's my pleasure now to pray for you and ask that God would do for us what he did for Solomon and give us wisdom for the events of today. And so let's pray. Heavenly Father, I thank you for the opportunity that we all have to live in this absolutely fabulous, fabulous city. We take the first moment to pray for our Mayor, Karen Williams. Pray, Lord God, you would give her wisdom as she leads us. And then as we, Lord God, lead our city through the matters that are on the table this morning, Lord, I pray that you'd give us wisdom. Help us to decide. Lord, the black and white, that's simple stuff. But Lord, there'll be grey areas. There'll be, you know, we're looking for win-win. And we pray you'd help us find that, Lord, for every area that we're addressing. We ask this in the name of Jesus, your Son. Amen. Amen. Thank you very much. And I pray you have a really great day. Thank you. Thank you, Wendy.
Okay, we move on to item number 4, recognition of achievement, but I haven't been advised of any. Number 5, receipt and confirmation of the minutes. May I have a mover for the minutes on the general meeting held on the 18th of October be confirmed? Moved Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Hughes, did you want to speak to that at all?
No, thank you, Deputy Mayor. Very happy with my follow-up of the minutes. Thank you to the ladies. We've got new member of staff on team. Very, very appreciative of their efforts. And I had a couple of questions with our general manager, Peter Best, who took on notice at last meeting, and he has followed up. Thank you, Peter.
Right. I'll put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. 5.2, special meeting minutes. Can I have a mover and seconder that the minutes of the special meeting held on the 25th of October 2017 be confirmed? Move Councillor Bishop, seconded Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Bishop, did you?
No, I believe they're all accurate and appropriate. Thank you. I'd just like
Thank you.
That.
I'll put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. Item number 6, matters outstanding from the previous council meeting. Nil? Okay, that was nice and easy. That's nil. Moving on to public participation. I haven't been advised of any speakers. Is there anyone in the, in the gallery that wanted to speak today? No. Okay, that saves me reading that page. We will go on to number 8, presentations or petitions. Has anyone got either to present today? No. And there's no order of business that I'm aware of for a change. And so we're up to item number 10, councillors, and I'd just like to remind you of your responsibility under the Local Government Act in relation to a councillor's material personal interest or conflict of interest about a matter to be discussed at a meeting, and a summary of the responsibilities are included in the agenda. So then we'll move on to item number 11, reports to council. 11.1.1, the annual community financial report. Can I have a mover and seconder for that, please? Move Councillor Hughes, seconded Councillor Elliott. Councillor Hughes, did you have anything you wanted to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Yes, I'd like to firstly move item 11.1.1, annual community financial report 2016-17. The purpose for this report is to present the Community Financial Report to Council for noting prior to adoption of the 16-17 annual report. Thank you. And I do have a question.
No, Murray seconded it. You can ask.
I'll go straight to my question. Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Yep.
Thank you. Through you to our Chief Financial Officer. Thank you, Deborah. In the report that we've got, and thank you to the team for the report, I'd like to go straight to page 7 of 7, always the bottom line. And the last sentence is the lean process improvement projects. And the last sentence reads, the lean methodology training continues and is supported council-wide. We've talked about this previously of our staff looking for the best options. It's interesting to note that there is literally ongoing training for this, and I'm interested a little bit more on that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you as Chair, thank you for the question, Councillor. On behalf of ELT, very proud to talk about the Lean training that's delivered across the organisation. So the objective of Lean is very much to improve processes, so to look at process improvements, add value, and also reduce waste. So when we talk about reduced waste, we're talking about reducing duplication, reducing inventory, looking at best prices from suppliers and creditors, and reducing movement, transportation, etc., etc. So there's a couple of courses that Council delivers through its executive team. The first one's a Lean Basics course, which is very much an introduction so people can go away, talk about it in their workplace and look at doing a better way of working, a bit like our mission statement, making a difference and making it count. Making sure there's value add. The second course that we offer is a 3-month project course where people do a Lean Learners and they take on a particular project and look to drive efficiencies and find practical and tangible savings across the organisation. Thank you.
Councillor Bishop, are you a speaker against or a question? A question, yes.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just want to acknowledge the ongoing good work that our officers do on our behalf for the community, and given the annual community financial report. Just on page 7 again, in relation to the strategic priorities, just wondering if people wanted to go and reference some information on those, just in terms of understanding what they are and so forth. Is there a place where people can get some clarity on those? I'll let that be a question on notice if necessary, but I just think as a community document, it's just worthwhile noting what they are and how they're advocating on the best interests of the community, and clarity on that would be helpful.
Thank you. Was there any other comments? Yes, Councillor Edwards?
Yeah, this actually dovetails in with the next item, of course. I just want to make a couple of points about the that I think are worth noting about our key financial ratios being basically met, except with two, and they're really ratios that should be looked over a 10-year period. Of course, we end up with some good strong cash balances in the bank, which is good to see. Our deficit, I think, when we were looking at this at the beginning of the previous financial year, we were looking at a much greater deficit. So I think we've done pretty well across the board. But there is one thing I'd really like to note is that the 16-17, Council delivered the largest capital program to date at $69 million, and that's a real good achievement. So thank you, and thank you, Peter, for delivering that.
And no further comments or questions, councillors. I'll ask Councillor Hughes to sum up.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I would just like to move the officer's recommendation that Council resolves to note the community financial report for inclusion in the 2016-17 annual report. Thank you.
Thank you. I put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. Item 11.1.2, annual financial statements. Can I have a mover and seconder, please? Moved Councillor Edwards. Seconded Councillor Hughes. Councillor Edwards.
Yes, item 11.1.2, annual financial statements. Move the officer's recommendation to note the report.
Thank you. Is there a speaker against or comments? Questions? Oh. You're right. Yes, Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. May I just ask through you to our Chief Financial Officer, Deborah, to just give us an update on what that means, because it's important that the QAO do these, and I think it's just worthwhile getting a summary from the officer, if that's appropriate.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you as Chair, thank you for the opportunity. So these are our consolidated financial statements for the 16-17 financial year. The Queensland Audit Office, the QAO, comes on site both at an interim time in March or April, and then for a final visit, usually in September, and it looks at not only our internal controls and our segregation of duties, but it also ensures that what we're doing and the numbers we're putting in our financials are true and complete. So we are blessed to have the QAO on site for in the order of 5 weeks every year. It works within the financial services area, and it checks not only the council numbers, but also our subsidiary RIC. So we have a company that looks at both the subsidiary and council, and then the financial services team consolidates those numbers to get the columns that you have today. We're proud that the last financial year saw the introduction of the related parties disclosure, and you may recall that the financial services team delivered a workshop around that. That's something new for not-for-profit entities this year, and we're very pleased with the support we've had from both councillors and the executive leadership team to make that a fine disclosure. We've had feedback from the QAO that it was very thorough, the work that we did. So, yes, I'm very, very happy to talk about the financials and happy to take any particular questions on last year's performance.
Just in response, I know that when the QAO come out, they're very grateful for the team's assistance and that you often provide above and beyond what they require. So that's just credit to you and the team. Thanks.
Speakers against or questions? Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. If I may, through you to the Chief Financial Officer, Deborah. On page 8 of the report, 8 of 35, in that box on the right-hand page down to the bottom, with the standard there, effective date 1st of January, that last bottom box that reads that Council is currently in the process of investigating the impact, understanding that we've not gone the full year through, but do we have any update on those impacts? Thanks.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you, as part of last year's annual financial reports, the accounting standards require us to document upcoming accounting standards and our understanding. This particular one that you're referring to at the bottom of the page, AASB 2016-4, talks to the impairment of assets, and we do an activity every year where we ask the asset managers and owners in the business, is the asset at its appropriate value? Is there any sign of impairment or obsolescence? So we don't anticipate major changes from this. We have a process in place that the QAO is comfortable with, but more than happy to talk to you when we implement this accounting standard this coming year, 17-18, to see if there's any impact to our financials. So probably no update at this stage. It's certainly on our radar, and it's every year we review the released accounting standards and the new ones to see if there's any impact to our financials. So the nature of this is around impairment of assets, and we have a process in place already at Redland City Council.
Thank you. Councillor Edwards.
Just a quick question, Deborah. I think I know the answer, but I'll just run through it anyway. During the year, we did a comprehensive revaluation of our assets, and the good news, we found that some of the assets were in better condition and had longer life, and as a result, I note that the asset valuation now has increased to $107 million, which is good news. But it would also be correct that we've got to now provide additional depreciation on that, so we've got further challenges moving ahead, because whilst our assets move up, the providing for the depreciation is going to present us more challenges. Is that correct?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you as the Chair, thank you for the question. You're absolutely correct, Councillor. The interesting point from the comprehensive revaluation last year, it was on the water and wastewater assets. The value of the assets went up, but some of the useful lives actually decreased. So then you're depreciating more over a shorter period of time. So from a balance sheet perspective, it's great when the value of assets increase. That's good news. Our current and non-current assets increase. But there is the impact to what we call the SOCI, the Statement of Comprehensive Income. The response from ELT is to continue with our comprehensive asset management project. We're now moving into the data cleansing phase of that, where we're going to be working with asset managers and asset owners across the business to really ensure that the value of the assets, those useful lives, the unit rates, and everything that contributes to getting a number on the balance sheet is 100% accurate. So Council will note in an upcoming budget review that we're looking at our depreciation forecast, and it does remain a constant challenge for us. Thank you.
If there's no further questions, I'll hand back to Councillor Edwards.
Nothing further to add, but good work all round.
With that, I'll put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. We'll move on to 11.1.3, Queensland Audit Office Financial Management Report. If I can have a mover. Thank you. Councillor Mitchell and seconder. Councillor Gleeson. Thank you, Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, I'd like to move item 11.1.3, Queensland Audit Office Financial Management Report 2016-17.
Is there anyone who wanted to speak against or for, had a question?
Question.
Yep.
Yep, through you to our CFO, centre stage again. I understand QAO is generally very, very happy with us and reflects our high functioning teams, so that's wonderful. Just wanted to see if you could translate some from finance to English for us around some of our medium deficiency items they're talking about, just mainly around the asset capitalisation and recognition of contributed assets. That seems to be where they've given us a please explain.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you, Chair, thank you for the opportunity to talk to these. We note that the QAO has commented on four deficiencies for the 16-17 financial year, and my view as an organisation of this size, that's quite a pleasing amount of feedback. There are no high, but you point out very kindly that there's three mediums and a low. In terms of the mediums, what the QAO is asking us to do is to ensure that as an entity, we are looking at our WIP on a regular basis and actually moving WIP in accordance with the accounting standards. So when something is a work in progress, it's not capitalised as an asset and it doesn't create depreciation. So that's fine if it's not a complete asset, but as soon as it's a complete asset, it needs to be accounted for appropriately on the books. Not quite sure that is plain language, so happy to have another attempt. But certainly all of the feedback we got this year was in terms of ensuring when we are going through projects creating assets, we're doing it appropriately with good governance and in a timely fashion. Then when we have the assets on the books, whether they're from developers as contributed assets or within our own creation, we're doing the works appropriately. So when I talk to the works, I mean the project management, the accounting, getting the right values on the books at the right time with the right useful lives and dollar values. So we have a great virtual team where we're working with different stakeholders. I'm sure you appreciate that there's many people across council that feed into a lot of these assets, whether they work on the asset capture space or the creation of the assets. So we formulated a virtual team to ensure that all the stakeholders are aware of their responsibilities And as we've discussed previously, when we get feedback from the QAO, we actually pull it into our internal action plan, and on a monthly basis, the group managers across council look at the actions assigned to them and address them appropriately. So all in the asset space. What I've also done is ensured that the asset management project that I'm lucky enough to sponsor has been informed of this feedback, and it will look to address it through the asset management project as well as through business as usual. So we're trying to do a double and pronged attack here, Councillor. Happy to talk further if needed.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Hughes. You have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through yourself again, back to our CFO. Excuse me, Deborah, you just mentioned in answering Peter's question through our group managers that we were working together on a monthly basis. On page 10, where we've moved this report down in issues, the last sentence under issues is the internal audit group will monitor and update the audit committee on the status of recommended actions. So if our leadership team are meeting monthly, where is the audit team coming into this equation? Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you, Chair. Great question. Our manager of internal audit is a group manager. So the group managers don't necessarily meet on a monthly basis, but they're sent a plan, an action plan, that they have to update on a monthly basis. And what the internal audit team does is it coordinates that action plan. So the actions that are assigned to me come out through internal audit, and I have to respond. Then what the internal audit team does through its group manager is it would table those at the audit committee that meets 3 to 4 times a year. So it's monitored. It's not something that we look at annually and it goes away and we come back in 12 months' time. And that gave me the opportunity to proudly say that on behalf of ELT, the 3 deficiencies found in the last year's report were all closed out this year, so they're all resolved. So we demonstrate that we do close out on these actions.
If there's no further questions or comments, I'll pass back to Councillor Mitchell just to sum up.
It's very important that the community knows that our external and independent audits are done. I think we can all be pretty pleased with the overall result, and even more pleased that our own organisation sees this as a partnership rather than as an exam from QAO and an opportunity to improve rather than be punished. So I think, good result all round, and carry on. Thanks. With that,
thank you. I'll put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. So we'll move on to 11.1.4, adoption of our annual report. Can I have a mover, please? Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Seconded, Councillor Edwards. Councillor Elliott.
Adopts an annual report as required by the Local Government Act. The annual report must contain information on Council's financial position, assessment of its performance and implementing its corporate and operating plans, as well as a number of other issues of public interest specified in the legislation. A copy of the report, the annual report 2016, must be approved by Council before it's published. And with all that I know if you're having insomnia, this is the great report to get over that, but we'll probably all go to where Council has spent their money and everything like that. That's the one you want to have a look at. So I'm happy to move it, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Was there a speaker against or for, or just open it up for comments? Yes, Councillor Edwards.
It's just one particular thing that was brought to my attention, about which I found surprising. It's just right at the beginning of the report, it talks about our profile. And one thing, we found this out during the week, and one thing I was surprised about is that when we look at our city and coastlines, we've got in coastlines, we've got 220 kilometres of coastline in this city. And then usually we look at Sunshine Coast and Gold Coast, but Gold Coast only got 44 kilometres of coastline and Sunshine Coast got 90 kilometres of coastline. So I thought it's interesting to know that how we're probably not regarded so much for our coastline as other neighbouring councils are, but that really puts into it's a light that we're really a council embraced by the bay and the sea. That was the only point I wanted to make.
Councillor Bishop?
I just want to acknowledge the great work that goes into the report that looks at how our organisation and the elected representatives all work together on behalf of the city. There are a couple of questions that I've asked of our executive leadership team, and I know there's been some discussions about how various reporting gets allocated to councillors, and I've asked some questions in relation to that, and I think that's important that that's ongoing. It's good to have a fresh new executive leadership team represented for the first time in this document, and look forward to them being there for years to come. Thank you.
Any further comments? Just before I hand back to Councillor Elliott, I'd just like to say I disagree with you. I don't think it's something that makes you go to sleep. I actually love it. No, I do. I just want to stress the importance of our NREM report. I've kept every one since I've got in here, and I've also kept a previous Councillor Bowler's collection as well. And I find them absolutely fascinating to look back through the years when you want to find out any document or, you know, factual information. I stress that, the factual part of council. It's in these books. That they are a fantastic source of information, that like a historical record of how council's functioning, and it's in-depth reporting in there. And I just like to say this is one of the easiest read ones I think we've had. The layout and everything of it, there's been a lot of thought put into improving that this year. So thank you to the officers who've actually done that. It's a great read. And now I'll pass back to Councillor Elliott.
Thanks, Chair. I got them back to 2002. I didn't keep them. And they're a very small, concise document those days, and I think actually I saw the other day, I think our revenues doubled in that time, something like that. It's about $130 million or something like that. Happy to move it.
Thank you. I've put the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. On to 11.1.5, the Crime and Corruption Commission audit. If I could have a mover and seconder, please. Move Councillor Bishop. Seconded Councillor Edwards. Councillor Bishop, I did ask Andrew Ross, once you've moved it, to speak to this yesterday. If you'd be happy once you've moved it, we'll hand it over to Andrew Ross.
Yes, with all due respect and cheek in tongue in cheek, I'll suggest that he doesn't speak to it yesterday but speaks to it now, if that's okay.
Yes.
Thanks. Having moved, I'll move 11.1.5, which is Crime and Corruption Commission audit managing conflicts of interest involving council employees.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, councillors. I present the Crime and Corruption Commission audit report on managing conflicts of interest involving council staff. As you can see from the report, our council was selected with 12 other councils to be audited. I can say with some pleasure we were one of three councils that were held to have a thorough and mature, a robust framework to deal with our conflicts of interest. The Commission has denamed the report to maintain confidentiality, but we were informed that we were one of those three. In terms of our framework, I can say we have a relatively proactive framework that's in the report. We have a corporate governance framework, we have a fraud and corruption framework, we have a public interest disclosure policy and codes of conduct. That's really to set a policy position, to set staff training, to set a registration, to set monitoring and to set auditing. It's not the first audit we've done before. We were subject to the CCC audit. This year, last year, we were subject to an external audit by the Ombudsman Commission. The next audit will be our internal audit with our audit committee, external audit committee, in 2019. It's something that we're relatively familiar with, and we're proud to receive the results from the CCC this year. I tender the table the report. Thank you.
Thank you. Were there any speakers against? Was there any other further comments or questions? Nope. I'll hand back to Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I think this is a significant report from the Crime and Corruption Commission that identifies that councils do make a significant contribution to the Queensland economy, as they say in their opening summary, controlling $100 billion worth of assets, spending around $13 billion annually, employing over 38,000 people. So it's a topical subject out there in the community. And while this report looks at the way we cross-check and verify the accounting processes, I'd just like to take this opportunity to say that beyond that, there are things in the community and in terms of discussions and future ways of managing, because we, the elected people representing the community, make decisions over land and zonings and decisions about procurement and so forth, that does have a potentially huge impact. When I went to a presentation from a Dr. Cameron Murray, he suggested that there are other ways of ensuring that decisions are made in the best interests of community that can capture revenue and make sure that it goes into the public interest rather than into the hands of individuals who may benefit from the decisions that we make in these chambers and other places across the state. So I welcome these, but I also think that there's an ongoing discussion about looking at those alternative ways to ensure that revenue goes into the best interests of the majority of people over the long term. And I think those discussions need to come from the community first, and over time policy may change, but the focus on this is welcome, and I'd like to then put the motion, if I may.
Thank you. With that, all in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. Okay, on to Community and Customer Services, 11.2.1, Decisions Made Under Delegated Authority. Can I have a mover and seconder, please? Move, Councillor Hughes. Seconded, Councillor Gleeson. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to move 11.2.1, Decisions Made Under Delegated Authority for Category 1, 2 and 3 Development Applications. Thank you.
Was there any speakers against? Anyone had a comment or question? No? I'll put it back to Councillor Hughes to put the motion, please.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I put the motion of the officer's recommendation that Council resolves to note this report.
Thank you. And with that, all in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. Item 11.2.2, Planning and Environment Court Matters. Can I have a mover and seconder, please? Move, Councillor Edwards. Seconded, Councillor Golay. Councillor Edwards.
Yes, sir. Item 11.2.2, Planning Environment Court Matters, current as of 25th of October 2017. I move the officer's recommendation to note the report.
Thank you. Is there a speaker against? Was there any questions or comments? I'll pass back to Councillor Edwards. Thank
Nothing
you.
Nothing further to add.
And we'll put the motion. All in favour? Thank you. 11.2.3, the Economic Development Advisory Board update. Mover and seconder, Councillor Hughes. And Councillor Elliott seconded it. Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. 11.2.3, Economic Development Advisory Board update. I'd like to move the report and then I would like to speak briefly. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a speaker against the motion? Speaker for or... comments? Yep. Oh, well, I have to go to Councillor Elliott and Bishop and then back. I thought she could do that in a sum up. All right. Yep, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I wish to advise that Terry Morris has resigned from the Redlands Economic Development Advisory Board. Terry's extensive expertise in the fields of manufacturing, tourism and rural enterprises, coupled with his tireless commitment to the pursuit of sustained economic growth for Redlands City, have certainly made a positive contribution to the success of the board's first year of operation. Redlands City Council has greatly benefited from Terry's pragmatic approach in providing guidance, valuable feedback, and contributing innovative ideas to help shape the new economic direction of the city, and we thank him for his significant contributions. Terry joined the Economic Development Advisory Board last year and was in attendance at the first board meeting in June. Terry is Chairman and Managing Director of the family-owned Morris International, a diverse business group incorporating property, manufacturing, information technology, tourism, venture capital and direct marketing. Terry's family owns Siramay Wines, a five-star winery that has collected over 800 prestigious national and international wine awards since opening in 2000. Terry has had over 50 years' experience in Australian commercial life, using the lessons learned along the way to grow the Morris International Group to the positive business organisation it is today. He is also active in many community and charitable organisations. On behalf of our council and our city, our sincere thanks to Terry for his significant and valuable contribution, I would like to note. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes. Councillor Elliott, then Councillor Bishop.
Thanks, Chair. Just draw your attention to page 10 of the report, and I'd remind the public this is the advisory board's report, not the council's report. The Catalyst Projects, as it says here, the Redlands Economic Development Advisory Board has nominated several projects as contributing to the objectives of the Redlands City Economic Development Framework 2014-2041. Some of these will come off and some of these probably won't, but certainly these aren't fully funded projects. So the Redlands Aquatic and Emergency Precinct, it's a $71 million project at this time, but it needs significant funding from probably other levels of government to make this happen. So these aren't all go as yet. And as we know, Toondah hasn't even got out of the starting blocks in its environmental impact statements. North Stradbroke Island, we've asked for a commitment from the government. We consider that's falling short of what we require. Our conductivity smart cities framework, we'll be talking about that soon in council. I think that's something we can handle that internally. But certainly our transport issues are bigger than Ben Hur. And this city is racked by congestion in the southern end it is, but certainly it certainly needs public transport to get the cars off the road. So they're things that we actively pursue the government on to get funding for. I'm happy with the report otherwise.
Thank you, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Bishop and then Councillor Edwards.
Yeah, thank you very much, Deputy Mayor. And likewise agree that the calibre of the people and the collective brains trust and the level of conversation among the this particular board at the discussion days is always robust and well-intentioned in the best interests of our community. I was not someone who supported either the creation of the Economic Development Advisory Board nor the Economic Development Strategies, of which I think we've got eight sectoral strategies. There's just a couple of things I'd like to point out at this point about this report that I think are important. One is that while it's great that this is going on, as Councillor Elliott has mentioned, there are discussion points about ways forward and catalyst projects. They're dependent upon state funding, about the sector coming forward and actually delivering these things. I think that's an important thing for us as the council and for the community and the commercial players in the city. I wonder where the levers are for them to get their hands on things, because this board shouldn't be the only lever, and certainly is not, but how do people get access to this information to make it relevant for their own sectors? I know we are doing sectoral studies and so forth, but I'm not quite sure how much we have those sectors represented, and my view is that those sectors should be coming to us with ways that we might be able to support them rather than us creating those sectoral plans. One of the other things that concerns me a little bit on page 5 is that in one of the paragraphs, it's the seventh paragraph, further to this, the board is to promote the city as a great place to do business, act as a link between council and key industry sectors to ensure open two-way communication, which is good. It's the two-way communication, how does the sectors get information between public and private sectors, and to partner with council to attract investment in the city, including lobbying the Queensland and Australian governments on key initiatives and projects. I think lobbying's important, but I just think that the best way we can do that is as the council is to set the strategy and address things like the transport studies and so forth and make sure they're robust so that the economic development team have got a way of managing the way they go forward. And also I think that there's a couple of things that are particular about the Redlands economy. We have a great deal of people in the social service sector. And we know that NDIS is rolling out across the state and it's about to come here in 2018. I can't see a great deal of information in here giving us a heads up about some of the peril that could befall some of the many, many employers in this city, and how we as a council can support and enable those people in an age of what will be massive disruption. And I think that those many people who are dependent in aged care, in social service, in the disability arena, that are supported by some of the boards that we also are sitting on, the Disability Network and the Redlands Interagency Network and the Seniors Network, they are all meeting. But I think that information coming back to this organisation, to this board, and preparing for things like the radical disruption that's about to hit national disability insurance in our city is important. And also in terms of a lot of the retailer providers in this city, we're about to have Amazon open, and that's going to potentially put a lot of businesses, small businesses that are already under pressure in this city, in a difficult position. And I think some of the things that we should be looking at is mapping what are the current strengths in our city rather than just focusing on what are the deficits. And I know that that's part of the work that's done, but I think we need to ask this board to say what are the things that we are doing well and how can the city themselves get their hands on this information and move forward as a sector. And I think that's an important part of our job as well. So I'd just like to say that this report's welcome, but I don't think that we should believe that this board is going to be doing everything for economic development. It's up to the people, and how do we make that information as relevant as possible for the people to get involved with businesses and communities. Thanks.
I was just going to call on the general manager of that area, Louise Rassan, if you could just answer how that the economic board is not meant to be the be-all, and how it's set up, how that feedback, how we all go... Yeah, how councillors and we do go there, and how there are other things happening as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Excellent question, and thank you, Councillor Bishop, for your observations. There's certainly things that we'll be taking on board as we move forward. The Economic Development Advisory Board is an advisory board. Council is the decision maker. So what the board is tasked with is to help implement the economic development framework that was endorsed by council by resolution. All of the recommendations that are made by the Economic Development Advisory Board come back to council for decision or for noting, and it is very much the council direction of where we head with the Economic Development Advisory Board. I'd like to pick up on a point that Councillor Bishop made. This is not just a single, small group of people that are responsible for economic development, nor a single board. It is a whole of council opportunity and initiative, and it's a whole of community opportunity initiative, working closely with business sectors, with community sectors, because you're quite right, there are wonderful opportunities for development, economic development across the city in the community space. And so we work very, very closely with stakeholders and community organisations to help deliver outcomes, because it's a if you like the term, it takes a community to bring up a village, to bring up a child. It's very much like it takes a community to engage in economic development. We also make sure that we provide reports on every Economic Development Advisory Board meeting that comes to council, and any member of the general public can see what the Economic Development Advisory Board has been discussing and presenting to council. The annual report was a recommendation or requirement from the terms of reference, so we have extremely good governance over that Economic Development Advisory Board, and I believe we're getting wonderful value from the experts that we have on that board assisting council in the decisions that, that council makes moving forward. Thank you, Deputy Mayor, for the question.
Thank you. Yes, Councillor Bishop.
Just in terms of those sectoral reports and overviews and studies that have come back, are they to be accessible, or are they already accessible to the community for perusal and consideration, just so the sectors themselves can verify and ground truth them?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, through you, and to address your questions, thank you, Councillor Bishop. We're working very closely with those industry sectors, so it's not they're not action plans that are being developed by officers in isolation of those industry sectors. They're working very much hand in glove in those areas. We've had assistance from consultants who work extensively and on a day-to-day basis in those industry sectors. The action reports, you might recall, we brought back the consultants' reports to an earlier general meeting, and we said that we would come back in a few months' time with how council will prioritise and budget and resource the action items from those reports. So that information is available, and we are looking at how do we deliver the top priorities that are sustainable for the city and accommodating our financial strategy so that we can afford to resource and budget those action plans. I hope that addresses your question, Councillor.
And I do believe they're on the net. They're on our website, for memory. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Councillor Edwards and Councillor Golay.
Thank you. Excellent report, great recommendations. When I was reading through this, I share the same concerns what Councillor Elliott rose when we look at the catalyst projects. It shouldn't be taken from the community reading that these recommendations are definitely going to happen and Council's putting their money in, because when I add up the catalyst projects, there's over $3 billion worth of funds there, and certainly Council's not in a position to commit to any of those without significant and substantial funding from other sectors and other levels of government. So, I think they're great, but I just want to reinforce what Councillor Elliott said. These things won't happen unless all our ducks line up in a row and there's other funding coming towards it. But good report, like the recommendations.
Thank you, Councillor Edwards. Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'd just like to confirm with those catalyst projects as well. There's definitely federal and state government projects there that realistically are sort of hanging in the balance of whether they move forward or not based on their say-so, not ours. If I could just seek clarification on the NDIS, my understanding of the NDIS was that individual residents would receive funding for them to go out and seek service providers to look after their...
Yeah, that's not part of the report that we're...
I'm going off one of the statements that Councillor Bishop raised in relation to the possible detriment to the area if we're not prepared for the NDIS. And I just want to clarify that the NDIS, I'm seeking clarification, isn't the NDIS funds provided to an individual for that individual to then go out and seek services? And what does council have to do with us providing those services? I have further things to say as well.
Councillor Golay, well, I think what Councillor Bishop's point was is that this isn't everything to do with economic development, that there are other parts like NDIS that, you know, will affect our local economy. I think that was his point. Whereas how NDIS rolls out and everything is not relevant to the economic development.
I understand that, but trying to raise it as the sky is falling, the NDIS is coming and we're not prepared.
But at the moment, Councillor, can I ask you to keep to this report?
Well, my point is that it's funding to an individual, and we don't provide services that the NDIS are going to be able to tap into, or those individuals. So I don't think it's relevant to raise that as some sort of a tactical observation that puts us in a poor light. But I'll keep moving on.
Thank you.
I just want to clarify again from what General Manager Community and Customer Services said. It's an advisory board who does sit there with us and officers and seeks to have some very clear action items and outcomes. They're not there telling us what to do. They're actually working with us with key stakeholders. And one of the examples of that is our connectivity. We all know that the Redlands suffers from poor connectivity with internet, and there's a lot of businesses doing it tough because of that. So one of the items that we actually talk about and observations is how do we work with key stakeholders trying to take the lead on connectivity, because we know that the state and federal governments will make it a political aspect, not an action item, and we need to move forward. So we've got to be able to support our residents and community here, and that's just an example of one of the things that we discuss, and we have action items that are put forward. There's a little bit of accountability on our part to make sure we're on track, and I'd urge all the councillors to attend the Economic Development Board to see what actually goes on. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think in the relatively short term that the board's been in place, it's opened up great opportunities, and I see we've got some catalyst projects, which we understand there's no guarantee of success there. There's no guarantee of success in anything in business, and I think the board is doing a great job in helping Redlands stop hiding its talents under a bushel. In some ways, we're reaching out to the region and into our community and offering opportunities, helping us select some strategic targets, review our focus regularly to see if we're still on track. But it's important that we sort of hold the course and give things a chance to mature. We can't keep tapping the brakes and expect things to occur. I think it's probably been chatted about already, but yeah, the board or council don't run business, and we're not saying that we're trying to. The board is through its consultants and its own individuals and council officers reaching out into the community, the business community, and the not just in Redlands, but the region, the state, and indeed across the world. And its role is to facilitate and look for partnerships, strategic partnerships, rather than do it. So we're all going to leverage that information and skills off each other. Specifically on the NDIS, to bring that up, I'm very aware that Council has taken steps to help the city become a little more NDIS ready. So has the Redland City Chamber of Commerce. They've had a number of forums to get both for-profit and not-for-profit businesses more aware. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So some are taking it up and some aren't. And the NDIS itself, I believe they've got some forums coming up, including for health professionals. I'll be going to one as a physio. So for providers, but also for the persons with disabilities and indeed their potential case managers. So it's quite complex and it's had its own issues, but wonderful opportunities. And a risk to those individuals and businesses that don't get on board and realise what's coming. So I agree with that. Very excited about some of the specific action items. So while the big picture strategy is awesome, bring it down under the ground. Some of the connectivity issues, I certainly urge Council to help get on board with our industrial states, Cleveland and Capalabar. City branding strategies moving along, that could be potentially a great source of investment and income earner for the city. And the incentive packages for our tourism and CBD, which are being assessed at the moment and will come back to us in a more, hopefully, strategic and targeted fashion. So lots of specific action items in there embedded in the overall strategy. So, yeah, let's keep moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other comments? Just before I hand back to Councillor Hughes, I too would just like to publicly give my thanks to Terry Morris for his contribution that he's done at the meetings I've attended of the Economic Development Board. He certainly is a voice of wisdom. He's a shovel-ready type person, and his expertise will be missed, no doubt. But if you look at the report and you see who else is on the board, it's an amazing wealth of knowledge from various sectors which complement council then when it comes back. It's great to get those outside set of eyes over economic development. And yes, it's not everything, but it's definitely a wealth of information in that one part. So back to Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. And I'd just like to reiterate Councillor Gollet, I'm one of the councillors that have tried to get to as many of these meetings as I can with the board. And like yourself, we can pop in and pop out between other appointments. Highly recommended to councillors to just observe, sit in the back and catch up on emails and just observe. It's really very entertaining and thought-provoking. So with that, I'll move the officer's recommendation that council resolves to Point 1, note the report to Council from the Redlands Economic Development Advisory Board meeting of 29 September 2017, and Point 2, note the Redlands Economic Development Advisory Board annual report 16-17. Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. And with that, all in favour? Passed unanimously. Thank you. On to item 11.2.4, and just before we go on to that item, can I have a mover for a procedural motion, please, that the item 10.2.4 of the general meeting 18th of October 2017 be removed from the table and discussed as the following item? Happy to move that, Councillor Bishop?
Yes, thank you, Madam Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. I don't need a seconder for that one. And I just do all in favour. Yep, because at the last meeting we asked it to lay on the table. We just have to now take a vote for it to come off the table. So now I'll ask for a mover for 11.2.4 annual sign licensing. Move Councillor Hewlett, seconded. Yep, Councillor Bishop. Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'd like to move 11.2.4 annual sign licensing. I'd like to move that option 2 be adopted, that Council resolve to continue the annual licensing of existing licensed permanent signs as per the current arrangement.
So is there a... Is that in the right procedure, though, when we weren't going for... We just had a mover and seconder for the first one,
well,
and now he...
I think he's actually changed.
Yes, so Councillor Hughes needed to... Hewlett, I mean.
An option, he needs a seconder. I think you...
I would be happy to second that option and talk to that if we get that moment.
Okay. Is that done in the right procedure just then? Yep. Okay. So...
The second option has been moved.
Yep. So now back to Councillor Hewlett to talk to him.
Yep.
Yes, back to you, Councillor Hewlett.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I've had... It's on now. Since this was left to lay on the table last meeting, there's been, and we discussed it yesterday, I feel that some councillors and myself included are uncomfortable with the way the report is worded, and we're uncomfortable that we're not addressing this as in depth as we should. I think that it should continue as is at the moment, and that we discuss it further perhaps at the fees workshops for the next budget. I think it's a too big a beast to just dismiss in a small report. I think it needs a lot more attention. Thank you.
Councillors, the officer Graham Simpson is in the room. Would you like him to be brought forward to for further discussion and questions, Graham? Well, I know Councillor Hughes has a question. And Councillor Edwards has a question. Some of us, I wasn't aware that this change was going to happen, so I presume there are questions. Can I move into informal first for information? Okay, so we'll do for and against and then questions. No, it's got to go against first. Okay, is there a speaker against this motion? Or would you rather go straight into informal and be able to get your questions answered? Go into informal first. So do we do a vote to go into informal?
No?
Okay, we'll just go into informal then. Sorry, who had their hand up? Councillor Hughes, then Councillor Edwards, then Councillor Bishop.
Thank you. My question, my understanding really revolves around the fact that in the report it says that there's $42,000 income being generated from this. But it goes on saying this is really just a full cost recovery basis, so it's also generating those fees, it's not really any extra income added to our revenue. And that from the report it says that if we remove the requirement for the licensing of the fee, then those resources that are currently being directed towards that can be, in this case, reallocated to increase sign assessment work. So that would suggest to me that by freeing up that resource, we're actually coming up, we've got a net benefit out of this process by taking the fee off. Would that be correct?
Through the Chair, just in response to that, it is correct. So essentially, What occurs at the moment is that we have resource dedicated to the annual licensing process, so that includes an admin component but also an inspection component for those signs that are licensed. So what we're suggesting is that in a sense that money is directed probably to something that we don't get a lot of benefit from, and for our purposes we believe that's better invested in the assessment of new sign applications. And certainly when City Plan comes into effect, the assessment of all permanent signs come over to the local law, so that's where that would be concentrated. Yep.
Councillor Hughes?
Just following on from that, thank you, Graham. In the current annual licensing arrangements in the report, looking to repeal Local Law 11 prior to March 2006, in my mind, maybe incorrectly, is we've got signs that were erected in this date under this law. We've got signs that were then erected at a later date under this law. And we've got one set of fees for this group and one set of fees not for this group or different. And so you're looking for some uniformity across the board. But we don't have a level playing field, so I'm very uncomfortable with this.
Again, through the Chair, thanks for the question. Essentially, that's correct. So Council basically had a Local Law 11, which was introduced back in 1999, and under that local law, there was a subset of signs which attracted an annual licence fee, and that... those signs were actually, which attracted the fee, were based on the frontage of the property and the size of the sign. So there was a bit of a formula that was in place at that time. In 2006, permanent signs moved from the local law over into the planning scheme. The advice or the decision at that time was that we don't apply annual licensing fees to those permanent signs, just due to the jurisdiction change from a local law to the planning scheme. And I guess the trigger for why this report's coming back up now is that with the City Plan coming on board, like we mentioned previously, we're heading back into a local law as the head of power. So there is that inconsistency in our view, just in relation to how annual licensing is applied. And based on the comment that we don't believe it's giving us any particular benefit from a regulatory or a compliance point of view, In our perspective, it's much better just to have a level playing field and we get rid of annual licensing altogether. Does that clarify that?
Councillor Bishop.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor, and through you, well, before I go to Graham, I don't agree actually with Councillor Hewlett's assessment that the report's not well written. I think it is clear, and the officers have been very, very helpful the whole way. I think that the thing that's most important for us to understand is that we want to make sure we get this right, because signs in our city is something that falls to council, and I think there's a community expectation that council does within its remit make sure that that's done in the most appropriate manner. I think that the reason why option two to me makes sense is that if we resolve to continue the annual licensing at the existing permanent signs as per the current agreement, we can have a bit of a discussion and deeper understanding about this during our budget deliberations. And the question I'd like to ask to you before I make a couple of other points, if we're going to get to that point, is to ask, would that cause a problem in an operational sense? And is there a reason this needs to happen now, knowing that councillors have got various questions, and if we can sort that out during budget, would that be a useful thing for the officers? Because I think us being clear is important. If I can leave it with that question at this point.
Yep, going through the Chair. Just in response to that, Councillor Bishop, I guess for us at the moment, we've delayed issuing annual licence fees for this year, with the point of view that we wanted to try and get it resolved. So I guess we just didn't, go down that path one more year. It's also spurred a little bit around the City Plan, like we mentioned, which I guess, you know, we're unclear, I guess, maybe when that's introduced. So again, we thought it would be a better process not to go ahead with continuing
continuing to do an annual licensing process with the prospect that the city plan could be adopted at some stage, perhaps this financial year or not. So that was kind of the driver to bring the report together now. In respect to whether it should be considered further in the fees and charges process, I guess my perspective is that I don't see a lot of benefit with annual licensing when we're in a local law setting. And the benchmarking, I guess, we've done with other councils is that that's, I guess, relatively consistent. So just to clarify that, depending on whether you run a local law or whether you run a planning scheme as your head of power for, I guess, approving signs, sometimes depends on whether you do want to do annual licensing as a thing, I suppose. But it's always a cost recovery exercise. It's never a case that it pays for compliance. It's only paying for the administration. So, yeah, my perspective is there's probably no real benefit. But obviously, that's a decision of council.
So, two things. First, a question to you, and then a question to the deputy mayor. Are we not charging at the moment?
We're charging. Sorry. Yeah, sorry, through the chair. We're charging basically 150-odd signs. There's 800 permanent signs that are approved by council, whether through a local law or through the planning scheme. So essentially those 150 attract the licensing fee, and the others don't.
So we are charging this year?
Well, we haven't yet.
That's an important point, I think. And I'll ask the Deputy Mayor, are we going to continue with questions to the officer now before we get into discussion? I have the microphone. Oh, okay. Thank you. So, I suppose the point I'd just like to make, while I have an opportunity, is that I think the signs in our community is going through a bit of a changing time with the discussion about LED signs, with general, you know, I know Brisbane just yesterday changed some laws about election signs allowed on people's properties, and that's got a lot of buzz and consternation in the media today, this morning, about what the impact of that might be. And I just think it's important for us to get clear as to what is the intention for community signs, for commercial signs, for new signs, for our own signs, with terms of branding. I think it's a potential area where for the potential for this to be proliferated and require resource allocation for compliance assessment from officers needs to be understood, and we need to be proactive about that. And while I understand that we can't charge for compliance in our fees and charges, I think it's important that we try to get this setting right. And I, as a councillor, don't have the full understanding about the change between putting it in the local law, it coming back now, and then removing the fee and charge. I think if we're full cost recovery, if there's a cost associated with applying for a sign, that should be attributed, and any costs to do with other compliance-related issues needs to come from a setting that we as councillors send clearly to the officers about what we expect for the city. So I think there's a broader discussion for us to be clear about, and that's why I would prefer option two. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson, then Councillor Golay, then Councillor Hewlett.
Thanks, Chair. Councillor Bishop just mentioned full cost recovery, and we most things in council when we're talking, we look towards full cost recovery on most items. And with all due respect to Graham, while he's in arm's reach of me, I don't see that this is going to. I can see this backflipping on us. I'd love to be able to say, yeah, okay, we're not charging for something anymore. People love that, but at the end of the day, I think it may introduce more problems out there, which is going to create more inspections and administration work, and we won't be collecting any revenue for it for that to be funded. So I can't support the officer's recommendation on this one in this case. It's going to take a little bit more convincing for me.
Thank you. Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just for my own understanding, so if we follow down the path of the current officer's recommendation, does that mean it removes the need to apply for a sign? And does that mean signs can pretty much be erected anywhere, especially when we start looking? I mean, what type of signs are we talking about? Because at the moment, yep, everyone's out there trying to put their election signs up. And if you go to some council areas, say Narang, for example, there is signs up trees on telegraph posts all over footpaths. It's just, yeah, it's madness. So are we, why are we really doing this? Like, why have we got some sort of compliance around not being able to just throw signs up everywhere? Or this is what I'm trying to understand.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, through the chair. Just to clarify the point in relation to annual licensing, we're not talking about application fees for signs that trigger an assessment.
Excuse me, Graeme, would you be able to speak up, please? Pull your microphone closer. We barely hear you up here.
Sorry. Just to answer the question around assessment of signs. So the application fees are not affected by what we're talking about here. So essentially, if the planning scheme or the local law triggers you into an application requirement, that still stands, nothing changes, the fees apply, gets assessed, gets an approval. So I just want to clarify that. The setting in relation to what signs require approval are set through currently two mechanisms, being the planning scheme and the local law. So planning scheme deals with your permanent signs, local law deals with your temporary signs, with the view that they will be combined under the local law once city plan comes in. So they're the instruments which set your policy in relation to what signs attract a requirement for an application. So there'll be several subsets. There'll be exempt signs, there'll be self-assessable signs, there'll be assessable signs similar to any kind of development. Election signs is an example where typically it's an exempt sign, and council basically applies a set of rules in relation to how they can be erected, and those things are generally based on not being on public land, can't be a public safety risk, can't be excessive amenity, and there's one or two other minor things. So we don't actually prohibit election signs as such, but they cannot be on public land unless in the situation of a election stall where it's attended. So that's your policy setting, is through the local law or the planning scheme.
Councillor Hewlett, then Mitchell.
Thank you, Madam. A question to Graeme. So if I have a business and I get a site assessment done through the DA process as currently, and it's it's 1 metre by 1 metre, and you approve it, so if I decide without telling council to make that 3 metres by 1 metre, the only way you're going to know about it is if someone complains. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that would generally be correct.
The reason I bring that up is because regulatory measures on signage is extremely important to a council, because you get a lot of complaints about illegal signage. And I think that's something that is grassroots work for council. That's where we should be in that space. We get into a lot of spaces that I don't particularly agree with, but I think regulatory measures in compliance is something that we should stay in. And I'm not saying put enormous fees on people, but there should be some sort of regulatory measure that gives us cost recovery on improving that service.
Councillor Mitchell.
Thank you, through you, Chair, to Graeme. Just trying to understand through your report, Graeme. If we remove the licensing fee, essentially, am I right in saying that gives us better consistency, that we're a bit too speed at the moment, charging some, not charging others? So there's a benefit to consistency? Yep, okay, good. Am I correct in saying it's pretty cost neutral either way, whether we're charging for licensing or not?
Yes, that would be correct.
Good. Okay. Am I correct in saying the effectiveness of controlling or regulating any bad signage, the fee is almost irrelevant. There are tools that we can use regardless. And is there will it be equally effective?
Sorry, through the chair, to clarify the question, so you're saying in relation to a compliance response?
Yeah.
Okay, so to clarify that, generally speaking, council is reactive, so we don't get into the proactive space too much in respect to sign compliance, it tends to be complaint-based. That's not to say there won't be circumstances where an application may be lodged for a particular site and we detect non-compliance and we deal with it through a process. That way, but as a general rule,
essentially we look to react to complaints as opposed to proactive audits.
Okay, all right. I think they're my questions. I don't see a lot of point in charging them. Thank you.
Councillor Golly.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Through you to Graeme. What would it take for us to be proactive in those compliance measures? If we're reactive, it's sort of like a hit and miss. If someone, if a resident's driving along and they say, oh, I think that's illegal, we might ring council, it's kind of like, well, what's that actually going to take for us? Because it's not just signs, there's probably other areas we could be proactive in as well. So what would it actually take?
Yep, through the Chair. It's we haven't done, I guess, any detailed estimates as to what it might look like, but an example would be when the Local Law 11 was introduced back in 1999, essentially an audit was done of all commercial properties in the city, and it took the best part of a year for two officers essentially to go around, visit and run through the compliance process. So what generated out of that was a, sure, you got more applications in and more assessments and more approved signs, but you also got a lot of non-compliance going through the process, and a fair bit of, I guess, angst just from general businesses out there in respect to council's activities. So it's always a balance that I guess we need to make in relation to what our compliance response should be. So, you know, whether it should be more proactive or reactive. And I guess some of the discussion we're having around, you know, the bushfire review is an example of that. So really it's about what we would prioritise as being important from a compliance perspective, and then we'd have to work out the resourcing and go through a process around budget, etc. Yeah.
I'm just interested to know how many areas of compliance are you actually responsible for? If it's not just signs, is it animal management? Is it construction? Is it
Councillor Golay, can we, because that's an ongoing, I think, discussion which could go forever once we start talking about other compliance areas.
Well, I'd just like to establish how, if we are resourced enough to cover most of the things that we should be proactive on, and we're actually not because we're under-resourced.
Point of order, Councillor Elliott.
Yeah, Councillor's wandered right off the subject. That's for discussion with Mayor and Councillors at another time.
Yep, can we keep to the report, please? Any other questions? Councillor Elliott?
A question, more a statement. I've seen what Graeme's here. I was comfortable with it. The General Manager, Louise Massand, sent a pretty explanatory email. I thought that sort of summed it up. But I have reservations, and I said to Graeme on the city plan that, you know, the government's in recess now and we probably won't see that for 6 months. But I'll give Councillor Hewlett the benefit of the doubt on this one. I'll go with him on option two. But certainly we've got to have a look at this licensing thing. Let's set up a workshop and have a look at the licensing thing and put it to bed. This coming and going every 2 weeks is not good. Thank you.
Are there any further questions, then? Yes, Councillor Hughes.
Sorry, Deputy Mayor. We're going to be we're looking at option two, and I'm just wondering if there's not support in the room for option two, what happens then, please? Then we have a second vote?
Yep.
Back to option one.
Okay, thank you.
Graeme, can I ask you a question? I'm seeing that there's a lot of points of agreement, actually, around the room, in that everyone wants assessment of signs, everyone wants compliance of signs, and a uniformity of fees. I think they're the three sort of issues. And then it comes to, if we go with ceasing the annual licensing, there's no funds being raised for compliance to cover it, is there?
I guess the response to that is that compliance is generally never self-funded through any kind of revenue collection. Animal management is probably an exception because there's provision in their act to do that, but generally speaking, compliance needs to be resourced from your general rate.
Mm-hmm. And if we were to cease the fees, could we then, with further information and clarification at budget time, introduce a uniformed fee at that stage?
I consider, I guess, the only option that, well, there's probably a couple of options, but one of the options would be that, you know, we have a 800 approved permanent signs, for example. We could examine whether, you know, we wanted to pay a licence fee to all of those signs. It would be a full cost recovery process again, and again, that would be restricted to our administrative elements. So I'm not sure the revenue would change that much from what we currently get, because currently we factor in an inspection where perhaps we wouldn't. So I guess they're just options we need to discuss if we went down that path. But I guess the thrust of what I'm saying is that compliance generally doesn't get funded by your licensing.
Deputy Mayor, through you, and happy for Graham to comment on this as well, but there's always an opportunity cost when you do things like this. So if we're spending our resources on having our compliance officers going out and doing compliance on signs that have already been assessed and already been approved and already have conditions in place, that if they fall foul of those conditions, we can undertake enforcement action. But the opportunity cost is, if we're spending our resources doing that, then we're not using those resources to do other compliance activities that you may in fact find of a higher importance to the community and of a higher safety component. Through you, Deputy Mayor, happy for Graham if he wants to make any comment on that.
Well, probably I'll just agree with you, Louise. Yeah, there's always that opportunity cost, and it's really about prioritisation in respect to what our compliance response is to any given regulation that we have as council responsibility.
Sorry, Graham. Okay. Councillor Mitchell, are you putting your hand up? Thank you.
Not sure where we're going, but I'm still... one more question, Graham, if I may. What's the reality of the number of complaints we get around signage? And in context of low, medium, high, however you want to give us a summary.
Thank you, Councillor Mitchell. Through the chair, I haven't got exact figures on me, but I would rate on low the number of complaints.
Okay.
Comparison to other compliance activities.
Okay. So I accept that, and there'll always be a hotbed of a sign somewhere that cheeses someone off. So if we chase perfection, we'll usually come up very disappointed, I think. So if it's low, and I'll accept that from our professional officers, there seems to be an additional cost to council, an additional cost to business, and not a lot of positive side that I'm hearing from our officers. So just a comment.
Councillor Hewlett, then Councillor Hughes, and then that will be it. I think everyone's had a couple of turns there.
Just a comment to the officer, thank you, Deputy Mayor, is we're probably not getting complaints because we are currently regulating it. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I'm just a little uncomfortable with option two from the point of view that it doesn't mention that we would review this at budget time, and I think that was the intent of Councillor Hewlett. Going with option two, is that correct? I just feel that the option two, that council resolves to continue the annual licensing of existing licensed permanent signs as per the current arrangement. Could we potentially pop a sentence in there after that to say it to be reviewed at budget, so that we can. Well, if we do fees and charges every year, why are we standing here or sitting here having this conversation?
It was to bring it ahead. So, Councillor, I think it was Hewlett, Tom, back to you to sum up, please, and we'll put the vote.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I think we've had enough discussion. Just happy to move option two as it stands.
All in favour? So, those against? Okay, all in favour? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Boglari. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those against? I'm sorry, Graham, with you sitting there, I'm getting confused now. Yeah. So those against are Councillor Hughes, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Golay and Councillor Mitchell. So it was passed. Carried. Right. Sorry, I was just seeing no hand there and thinking that someone wasn't voting. Okay, thank you, Graham, for that. 11.2.5, review and renew of the funding to the Redlands Museum and NSI Historical Museum. And I have a mover, Councillor Bishop. Seconder, Councillor Elliott. Councillor Bishop.
I'd like to move the officer's recommendation in relation to the review and renewing delegation to Chief Executive Officer funding agreement for Redlands Museum and North Stradbroke Island Historical Museum.
Thank you. Is there a speaker against?
No, I did, because I was just moving the motion, but in relation to this, I think it's very important that we identify that these are two extraordinary organisations that provide, both voluntary organisations that provide an incredible benefit to our community. I know it's already been identified in budget that this agreement would be continuing. This just clarifies and resolves that Council does support that in a public forum, and I think it's really important. I certainly know that with North Stradbroke Island transitioning, that there are, I believe, significant opportunities for some of the international best practice work that the North Stradbroke Island Historical Museum does find through their research and their various things that could be actually introduced to the Economic Development Advisory Board and looked at other ways of actually building, because they are a... they provide a hub for that community and also are very aware of some of the stories past, present and emerging that are very important to that community, and I think we could benefit from further connection with the organisation and the broader community and even the commercial world because they also do something quite empathic and deeply respectful about listening to the stories of significance on the island and doing it in a way that is very world's best practice. In fact, due to a fire that happened, the Uluru collection would have entirely disappeared unless the North Stradbroke Island Historical Museum had been involved in, I think, one of the world's best examples of allowing a cultural asset owned by individuals to be managed in support of North Stradbroke Island Museum, so that the collection was able to be preserved and managed and digitised. And I think that is a silent story, and there are many others that are of international significance that they continue to do well. So absolutely support this, and I'll end speaking there.
Was there a speaker against? A comment, Councillor Elliott?
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt Councillor Bishop, but this is just about the delegation for the CEO to handle it, not about the agreement itself.
Any further? No? Okay, back to you to put the motion, thank you.
I'll just put the motion.
Right, all in favour? Passed unanimously, thank you. Okay, then we... Okay, now there is a mayoral minute, and the mayor can have a mayoral minute so long as she has advised council of the mayoral minute, which she has done, and as the chair of the meeting, I am allowed to present her mayoral minute. Everyone has a copy, and I presume it's up on the board. It's just that Council resolves to endorse and submit the Redlands City priorities for the state election 2017 document to all Queensland state government political parties and local candidates seeking their support for our priorities. I've moved the motion, and what we do then? Well, people want to speak to it. What? Before I put it? Yep. Okay. So you want to speak to that?
Yes, thank you, Deputy. I'm not sure whether I'll take advice from the General Manager on whether I should declare a conflict of interest, as my brother-in-law is one of the state candidates for the Redlands, and I was involved in the creation of this document, I guess.
It wouldn't hurt declaring a conflict of interest.
Perceived conflict of interest. And then you could say your perceived conflict of interest is that your brother-in-law is a candidate in the state election, and then you just need to make a decision about whether you stay and participate or whether you leave the meeting.
Thank you, John. I would like to declare a perceived conflict of interest, and I think it would be best if I left the meeting for this decision.
Okay, so our are you going to leave? Yep, so that's duly noted in our minutes. Yes, Councillor Golly?
From the perceived conflict of interest then, wouldn't we all declare a perceived conflict of interest? We all know Councillor Tolte is a state candidate as well. She's one of our colleagues. We all work with her. So
no, I would. Sorry, it's not up to me to say that. My apologies, General Manager.
I mean, it's sort of in the same.
Well, the quirk of the legislation is that it's actually your call, so you need to decide whether you have a perceived or real conflict and then declare that and then choose to stay or go.
Well, it's in my opinion,
knowing Councillor Tolte would bring everybody in, so I expect it's probably not really a conflict if you're asking me in a strictly statutory interpretation sense, but again, it comes down to your personal opinion.
I'm just sort of going off this perceived one here. Does that mean we're all supposed to walk out because we all know...
The relative.
You know?
Yeah, and the relative.
Well, everyone's related in the Redlands, mate, so...
So are there any other... Trace, Councillor Hughes?
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. With that, I hadn't actually put any thought to a perceived conflict with a political affiliation that anyone may have around the room. I have a political affiliation, but I don't see any conflict with this document.
No need to do.
But just now that it's been raised, I'll just ask that question.
Again, it comes down to personal interpretation, but if you're asking me for a view on interpreting the legislation, then I don't think it would be a real conflict of interest, being a member of a political party or knowing Councillor Tolte.
Councillor Edwards.
I just wanted to say I don't see there's any conflict of interest because the document is being sent to everybody equally, so I can't see how there's any conflict at all.
That's right. So the document is actually all about Redlands City needing strong representation from candidates in the upcoming state election, so it's not political. We're going to be talking to absolutely everybody for a range of projects and priorities that we see are needed in our city, and we have developed this document that outlines those commitments, and I have noted that many other councils across Queensland have done the same thing, and so everybody is trying to get it more formalised at election time. And we are seeking from all local candidates and political parties based on the highest priority state government needs of the city. So we've run through them, and it's all trying to improve Redlands, and we have to get state backing on various projects, and that's what this is simply about. So with that, I'd like to put the mayoral minute. I've got to... And then I just...
You don't discuss it. People could speak to it if you wanted to.
So is that after or before the vote people speak to it? I haven't put a mayoral minute before.
Yeah, I think the only nuance is that it doesn't require a seconder, so it's kind of like a notice of motion. So it's effectively on the table as if it has been seconded.
Right,
okay. Port of call would be rules of debate for or against if you've exhausted that, and at the chair's discretion, if you wanted to allow questions or statements, that's your call.
Okay, so is anyone against? No, so I'll just open it up for those comments then, or questions. Councillor Bishop, then Councillor Mitchell.
Yes, thank you. I understand why this is the timing of its coming about, because we're a couple of weeks away from an election, and I appreciate the draft and this document we have in front of us. There have been some important changes that I think are much more appropriate in my view. The issues that I have that I actually, while I understand people wanting to get support from candidates, we are wiser, in my view, to have a very clear strategy about what our intentions are for these various particular things. And I know that I can't necessarily go to documents that identify what the council's current strategies are on some of these issues. Now, that's the sort of document that a state government elected should be able to refer to, and that's the work that I believe we as councillors need to do, rather than just get to election point and then say to candidates, can you support these things that we've come up with, and we hope that we'll then have your advocacy going forward, without having clarity as to how they connect to our strategies. So I'm not going to give my support to this, because I believe that it's playing the red-green-blue game of supporting some people and saying, can you promise, knowing that those candidates cannot make promises. If they get elected and then they get into office, what strategy are they referring to, apart from a document that's time-damaged and doesn't have the clarity of this organisation and our representation as the elected councillors for what we want to see in future? I don't see that, and it's because I can't see how this relates to our stated strategy, and how that's verified and cross-checked so that an elected government can then say, this is what council's been saying, they said it during the election, they said it consistently before, and we can anticipate they'll do it after. So I'm going to hold off on supporting this document for those reasons. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Mitchell, then Councillor Hughes and Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks. No, I feel quite the opposite. I think it's a great document. I think it's, well, says Redland City Council on this, it's on the behalf of our community and trying to achieve better results and funding for our community, and it's to all candidates. I think my awareness of the history of funding and from the state level into the Redlands is that we are a little neglected on any factual basis, whether it be through population or other matters. And so not asking for more than we should have, but just our fair share. And I think this is a great educational document. I think it's a great advocacy, educational for our community on what some of the state responsibilities are, rather than just local government. Also great advocacy and great awareness. So, no, I think it's a terrific document, and I'd really encourage our community to have a look and have a talk to your state candidates. That's what it's about, polite and frank discussions from our community to their candidates. Not our candidates, they're their candidates. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Hughes.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I will agree with Councillor Mitchell and potentially disagree a little with Councillor Bishop with this document. I think there's a lot of reference from my time here in Council to issues that we've been consistently raising and consistently noting challenging. I don't think that this is in any particular order. However, public transport, we've just mentioned previously in other reports, this is a major issue across our city. We don't need our elected representatives to go back to too much documentation. They just need to go out on the street and talk to the person at the local bus stop, as we all know, if we can get a bus stop with shelter. Sorry, got to throw that one in there. I just think that this document will not be quickly, as Councillor Bishop just mentioned, time poor. I think this will hold steady for our elected representatives in post 25th, once we have three elected state representatives. This document will hold firm for them, as this is what our council sees to hold to state government, whatever that state government is, to represent our city, and I commend the document. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Gleeson.
Thanks, Chair. I'll keep it short and sweet. Just in response to Councillor Bishop through to you, I respectfully disagree. I think it's very important that we get commitment from the candidates that are out there making promises, and whether they can or can't keep them when they get in there is yet to be seen. But we need to know that we've got state members in the Redlands that are on the same page as council. Makes it a lot easier to work within different levels of government if that can happen. So I totally support it.
Thank you. Councillor Golay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I support the document in the fact that it's a subtle reminder to those candidates who are seeking to advocate on our behalf as a community at state level, hoping that they will advocate effectively to the people who hold the money and divide that money up under state priorities of spending. At the moment, we're seeing a lot of candidates out there promising large projects that, whether it's a state road upgrade or whatever, that realistically they don't hold the purse strings, and it doesn't fall within the state priority to do so. So they've got to stop throwing these one-liners out there in order to attract a vote and be fair dinkum with the people, because that's all they're asking, is to be open and honest and transparent that what they're actually saying they're going to commit to. I think by us putting all candidates under the spotlight and saying, how are you going to effectively advocate on our behalf to get the priority projects that we require to support the community and dispel the myth that all roads lead to council when it comes to state and federal projects? I think this is a good, subtle, strong reminder to all those candidates. You've got to not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. And we're asking you to advocate strongly to the people who have the money to be released for major projects. Forget your throwaway lines for a vote. We're sick of it. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay. Just summing up, I'd like to say that, yes, council does have to be strategic, and I think part of our strategy is to, like Councillor Golay said, be upfront with all candidates, that we want accountability. We want you not to give us false promises, but just to commit to working with us on these things. We've all been victims, and so has the community, of false promises and high expectations which can't be delivered. But we have to be strategic and let them know, you know, Redlands, we need you. We need you to come on board and work with us. And I think that's what this is all about. And I'd also like to say that when our four new candidates get in, we start having them in here for regular meetings, and let's let them give us some KPIs and actions taken. You know, have them in here every 3 or 4 months and say, well, Rob, what have you done on the various things? And let's get, this is what they... No, but let's hold them... So let's talk to them now, say this is what we want. Are you prepared to work with us? And then afterwards, let's make sure we really keep those lines of communication open and get some updates from them regularly, face-to-face. And I think that's what it might take. So with that, we'll put the mayoral minute. All those in favour? All those against? Those in favour are Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Golay, Councillor Mitchell, Councillor Boglari. Those against, Councillor Bishop. Thank you. So, Brian, I take you've got a copy of that to make sure that they know we're fair dinkum on that one. And Councillor Hewlett. Excuse me, Councillor Mitchell, could you ask Councillor Hewlett to come back in? So, Number 13, we've got no notices of motion to repeal. I don't know of any notices of motion. I haven't been advised of any urgent business with... Thank you for telling me. Okay, so then we move to item number 16, which is in closed session. Councillor Elliott? Yes, are councillors happy for that? Just to... Yeah, well, yep, okay. So, Councillor Elliott, can I have a seconder for that, please? Councillor Gleeson? Councillor Elliott? Yep, okay. So we'll put number 16.1.1, the motion. All in favour? Passed unanimously. Is there any need to move into closed session for 16.1? No. Councillor Elliott? A seconder, Councillor Edwards, all those in favour? Councillor Gleeson, Councillor Hughes, Councillor Elliott, Councillor Edwards, Councillor Hewlett, Councillor Golay, Councillor Mitchell, those against? Councillor Bishop, Councillor Boglari. Well, that made that easy. And I will declare the meeting closed at 11:20. Thank you very much.